Welcome to the second hour here of Authentic News, right here on RBM Live, this 27th day of March, 2024. The New York Times, by the way, I knew
today's date,
individuals growing up who lived and breathed by the New York Times, a woman who was earning a PhD in clinical psychology in the University of Kentucky, where I had my first position as an assistant professor of philosophy.
Martin Parsons, who was a medium.
Read every single issue of the New York Times every single day and felt her life was meaningless without it. It has turned into a garbage rag. Disgusting propaganda. And please, we got Paul from New Jersey here who always has thoughtful things to say. Paul, join the conversation.
It's a bit of a different subject from here. So,
concerning the New York Times, that is a garbage magazine or a newspaper. I figured that out in the 90s when I was reading some of the articles.
Give us a bit of how you got to where you are, what got you into mediumship. Just give us
it's a really long story, Shelley, which I'll skim right down. But basically, a lot of strange things started happening to me when I was in my 30s while I was working. Experiences that I couldn't explain. Pushing things around in front of me in the house and that sort of thing. And I was wondering what was going on. They even started playing tricks with me when I was at work. I was trying to scare a girl one night as a bit of a joke outside a church, telling her that there were ghosts outside the church, and it backfired on me because the phone box next to me started ringing, and when I asked the station who was calling, they told me it was a Reverend Green, which was the guy that had supposedly passed away. So it frightened me as much as it did the girl that was sitting next to me. So that was quite funny. But lots of stuff like that. And I ended up meeting some strange people that were doing the same sort of work. And I got invited to develop with a great medium who's not here anymore, a guy by the name of Bill Landis. And he taught me on a one-to-one basis, and I was very, very lucky to have him. And since then, I've been working in London, abroad, the Southwest, all over the UK, really. And theatre work as well. I've done some work in front of people in theatres, probably 200, 300 people, that sort of thing.
Yeah, you've been a busy bee. I've been fortunate to see you do some demonstrations, over the years. And Lawrence, over to you, my lovely. Tell us a bit about how you got to be a shaman and stuff into it.
It all started for me in a bookshop in central London. I've always had a fascination about standing stones. What are they? Them there and why?
Oh, standing stones, right. Sorry.
Yeah. In this bookshop, and I found a very slim book called Standing Stones of Southern England. So I thought, I'll buy that. As I pulled it out of the rack, a leaflet fell out advertising a shamanic course, a one-day course, introductory thing. And my partner at the time, she said, well, you've got to do it because it's an omen. And
it's
no, there's no such thing. Don't go there. But she said, well, I'll buy it for you for the week for your birthday. And it was a weekend course, and I did not want to go, and I put it off till about 2 weeks before, and she kept badgering me, have you applied to do that? No, well, you've got to do it. In a couple of stories, I did it. Turned up, and for the first 10, 20 minutes, I thought, no, this is not for you. The 28 people sitting around in a circle with rattles, just rattling away. And I thought, no, what on earth is this? But once the person that turned out to be my teacher, Kenneth Meadows, once he started talking, it all clicked. Everything clicked into place. And I thought, yeah, this makes sense. And that was in 92. And I've been doing it pretty much ever since. I did the A Year's Foundation with Kenneth, and then he asked me and several others to stay on to progress, which I did. Kenneth passed away in 2000, and I've been running courses and talks and demonstrations pretty much since then.
Wow. It is fascinating because, I mean, it's such a journey to come to where you're at now. I think lots of people don't realise that you do study these things. Everybody thinks that you're either born with these things and that's that, but everybody has potential to step into the shoes and learn these things. So if we go over to you then, like Martin, how would you explain what is a medium for those that don't know? Define, mediumship and what it's all about.
So mediumship is always considered, first of all, to be an experiment. You cannot guarantee any results when you're working either privately or publicly in front of an audience. But a medium's only job is to provide evidence of survival after so-called death. And they do that if it's all working correctly for them. As I say, it's always an experiment. If you're having a good night, and you can have bad nights as well as good nights, but if you're having a good night, then you get evidence of people's loved ones, friends, relatives, sometimes neighbours, people that you knew years and years ago when you were a child that had taken time to spend time with you or helped you in some way. So it's not just family. It can be friends, as I say, neighbours from your past. But the way I work with people is that I will be able to give them hopefully detailed descriptions of who is communicating with me. I hear them, I see them, and I can describe what they're wearing, what their likes are. I even get to know what the character of the person is like. So hopefully when all that comes together, I will be linking that with people, if it's a public demonstration, with people in the audience who sometimes are emotionally involved with that communicator to the point where it can be quite tearful. But it's not tears of sadness, it's tears of closure and happiness that they sometimes realize that, well, how did he know that? If he knows those things about my family or my friends and I haven't told him, then there must be something else after death. And that's really what a medium does.
And that's what everybody wants proof of, isn't it? So we
want, without a doubt.
We go somewhere. My elderly nan, who's 99, she's always said, no, there's nothing. And she's like end of life stage at the moment. And I think she's convinced now that there is something else. And she's hoping more than anything. And I say, well, worst case scenario, if there is nothing, you won't know, will you? But I kind of, being quite spiritual myself, I kind of think it's quite exciting to go through the experience of, I've got all these ideas, but to me, my dead animals will probably come to me first.
Yeah.
But no, it's a fascinating thing, and I suppose such a healing tool. But then there is there's the other side of it, where we've got mediums out there everywhere that supposedly have a gift. And I was on the circuit a long time ago when you were working, and it was very much a part of my life, and I wanted at the time to be a medium.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand the pressure. The ego was always in the way. And, it's not for me anyway. At the end of the day, I see people like yourself and Ali Winters and stuff. It's their life. It's what you do. Once you're there, that is just a massive part of your life.
It's amazing. I feel very, very privileged to have discovered this or been brought into it, however that happened. The beauty for me is when you've worked in front of an audience, I've had people come up and say, you don't know what you've done for me this evening, in absolute floods of tears. That sometimes happens whilst I'm working, and I have to check that they're happy for me to carry on. But as you say, it's the realization that if I'm picking up this information and they haven't told me it, then where's it coming from? So it opens doors for people in their heads that they didn't even know were there, basically. And it's great for me. to be able to walk away. It's a funny thing, mediums, when they're talking together, if they're socializing and they're talking about work that they've done, you'll often hear them say to each other, I did my job last night because somebody was in tears. Well, that sounds quite callous on the face of it, but what they mean is that the person absolutely recognized and was moved by what they were told, rather than, and as you've just said, that there are a lot of people. The problem with this work is that it's, Shelley, is it's not police. There's no governing body that says, right, you can do this and you can't, and you're not going to do it. There's a lot of people out there that only do this, sadly, for the money. They cold call people and they're not really what they say they are. But then I guess you get that in all walks of life. Wherever you look and whatever you deal with in your life, there are always those that will take advantage, lie and cheat. And that makes our job as mediums all the more difficult. But for me, it's a privilege to do this work. Every time I work, I always leave on a high with a buzz that I've made some people think about actually what's going on and maybe giving them some closure.
Yeah, yeah. I've been at lots of demonstrations, and I mean, I've had messages myself that nobody would know that information. And, you know, in the early days, I think we used to see a lot more of someone like, I've got your granny here. It's not enough. We've all got a dead granny in spirit, you know, and it was too. And once you start getting into the practice of it and stuff, you learn, well, there's a lot more to it. And are you SNU trained?
Yes. Well, I was trained by the Spiritualist National, or the Spiritualist Movement, but a lot of those in those days, because I started way back in, early 90s. In those days, the places that I worked at and where I was trained was SNU governed, but a lot of them weren't. So basically the Spiritualist Movement trained me, and I like to give something back to the churches wherever it is that I'm living or working, because I always recognize that it was them that got me where I am today. So yeah,
I just ask because, like, at the time when I was developing and stuff, lots of churches, they would prefer quantity rather than quality in services, and the whole granny thing and stuff like that. And then when mediums like yourself would come on, you might only reach 3 or 4 people, but you're given you've got a method to work through to establish that connection.
Yeah.
And to give evidence and stuff. It's not just I've got granny, she says hi, blah 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 blah, you know. And it is, I think, more people that get into it now. I still see Ali quite a lot, actually, but you know, it's a massive thing, and there's unfortunately there are too many people that want answers, and when they hear I've got your mum here and but no evidence, you know, and it's the littlest yes. of things, you know that's so touching. So
exactly
yeah. So this is strange because I'm like, over to you now, Lawrence. We do it a bit like this. So Lawrence, you're a shaman. So explain what exactly a shaman is. I perceive it shaman, medicine man. Am I wrong, right?
Yes, you're about 75% correct. It would be easier to tell you what a shaman isn't, or what shamanism isn't.
Right.
It's not a religion. It's not a set of rules written down by somebody for you to follow. There's no head of the order. There's no great Gandalf sitting somewhere telling you what to do and what not to do. That's what it isn't. Oh, and it's not a sect. It's not a secret cult or sect. And shamans don't eat babies. They, you know, that's
I've not heard of that one, but okay.
No, we don't do it. I couldn't eat old one anyway. What a shaman does is he will, or she, there are lady shamans as well, they will bring an individual's spirit into harmony with their physical body, into balance. And that's all it is, really. Through the shaman will do this through different techniques. One of the things that the shaman is, or shaman are really famous for, is a shamanic journey, which is where the shaman enters an altered state of awareness to gain information from spirit world, this world, the lower world. And when I have to tell you that when I say lower world, I don't mean H-E-L-L or anything like that. It's just different levels on which the vibrations work. So what the shaman needs to assess through talking to the individual before a journey is undertaken is why that person has come to you, what they need, and your ability to cover that. The sad thing is with a lot of them, a lot of people, they ask for what they want, not for what they need. Which, if unless they're careful, they're two different things. And that comes down to the skill of the shaman, basically. The shaman can do, well, very quickly, it's a power animal.
Yeah.
A power animal. So if you have an issue, let's say, in your workplace or your relations or just your general life, the shaman will undertake a shamanic journey with you present, normally either laying or sitting alongside, and they will obtain through their journey, the shaman's journey, a power animal for argument's sake, for Shelley. The shaman then, once this animal appears, the shaman then asks, are you Shelley's power animal? If it vaporizes, the shaman will inhale that vapor and transfer that over to the individual. The next thing, the next stage in that, if you have a power animal, is you look at the attributes of that animal and you put them into your life. So I can tell you, because the person involved, this person is never going to find out what I've done or what I've said. And if they did, if they did find out, I'm sure, 90% sure they wouldn't mind. I did one, a power animal retrieval for a lady a long, long time ago, and it was a snake. And if there's three things on the planet that scare the pants out of me, it's snakes and frogs. I do not like them at all. And this snake kept appearing, and I was on my journey. I was looking the other way, and eventually the snake said, look, I'm not for you, I'm for this person. It's okay, fine. Vaporized, breathed it in, transferred that to the individual, and this person said, well, what do I do now? I said, well, you have to look at the attributes of the snake and put them into your life. How do I do that? Okay, well, a snake travels on its stomach. It has legs, but they're like in large scales, but it doesn't use them. So it travels on its belly or its stomach. So that's telling you straight away, whatever it is, get grounded. Whatever the issue is, get real about it. Get your feet on the ground about it. The next big thing is that a snake shed their skin. So that could be a change of lifestyle or a change of attitude. The next thing, although a snake hunts, it doesn't chase its prey like a lion or a tiger. It very slowly goes around. When it's ready, then it will strike. So that's telling you patience. And this lady put all that into her life, and thankfully it worked for her. She put all of that into this situation, And away she went. She was, you know, over the moon with it afterwards. That's a power animal. You could do several other techniques along the way, which you'll probably ask me about a bit later on. But, yeah, the other thing I need to say is there are shaman or have been shaman on every continent on the planet. So you go to South America, they've got the shaman in the jungle. Come up a bit, you've got the Native Americans, where you get the medicine man bit from. Go up further north, you have the Inuit or Eskimos. Go over to Siberia, Siberian shaman, Japanese, Indonesian, Indian, right the way across. The Sami people are very in Norway and northern Finland, very, very into the spiritual side of looking after the earth and the planet. Even to an extent, the Druids, the UK is famous for. So on every continent and land, there have been shamans. The oldest representation is about 3,000 years old of a person, a shaman. And that was a lady as well in northern China. And she, although she was in, when she was alive, she was about, I think it's 5'5" or 5'6", but she was buried with massive tattoos on her arms and little, like, square blocks, which the anthropologists have worked out are the meridian lines that acupuncturists still use today. The other famous thing about her is she was buried with an immense headdress, which was nearly 4 foot tall. So if you imagine that, this lady appearing in a group setting around a campfire, although she's quite little, she's got this huge headdress on. What a presence that must have been, you know. So, yeah, that basically is what a shaman does. He's balance your physical with your spiritual through the various techniques.
Have you tried mediumship as well, Lawrence? I only ask because I'll ask Martin the same if he's tried, because, I mean, I've delved in all these little bits, and I think if you're, like, kind of spiritually aware, you, like, go to that bit, you do a bit of Reiki, you go and do this. I've sat in shamanic drumming circles and done a couple of journeys and stuff, and the mediumship side of it. So have you delved into the mediumship side as well?
I did a one-day course with Martin, which Martin, bless him, said was very good, the information I got. I think he was just being polite, really.
No.
But I haven't taken it any further.
No, it's not your calling, but it's interesting, isn't it? And what about you, Martin? Have you done some shamanic journeying?
You've caught me out with this one. I hadn't got a clue about shamanism. All I knew, and wrongly apparently, I assumed that shamans were, as Lawrence explained earlier, something to do with the North American Indians or the medicine men from over there. I didn't realise until Lawrence put me straight that they were all over the world. That was a revelation to me. And no, I haven't tried anything else. I have been involved in lots of workshops and teaching regarding the mediumship, but I certainly haven't tried any. Lawrence very kindly came here one night and took me on a journey, which we'll talk about with you later with the evening that we're having on Sunday. But he took me on a journey, like a meditative journey. He'll explain that to you, I'm sure, in a minute. And some amazing things came from that. The people that I was, and the animals that I saw, the people where I went, he explained to me afterwards. It was absolutely fascinating. But other than that, I've got no knowledge about it at all.
No, because I mean, I'm just sure that as a medium, do you meditate a lot?
Yes. It's more like these days. It's more do as I say, not what I do. I used to, when I first got involved, I was meditating 3 or 4 times a week, working up from 20 minutes a session up to 50 minutes to an hour. And that really kickstarted me on my journey. It taught me to let go. It taught me to get out of the way. Mediums, when they're working, are constantly trying to get them what they call get themselves out of the way. And that means stopping the little voice in your head, making up a story which you think you're picking up, but actually you're not. You're making up yourself. And that's where a lot of mediums or psychics fall down. They don't know how to get themselves out of the way. And that you achieve that through meditation. That teaches you to forget about your daily chores, what it is you've got to do, about where you're going, you know, meeting somebody, going shopping, whatever it might be. It teaches you to, when you sit to meditate for the first few times, that 40 minutes to 50 minutes, it is yours and yours alone. Once you can learn to do that, and that obviously involves, turning off phones, shutting blinds, knowing that nobody's going to phone you or get in touch with you. You've got nothing to do. Once you realize these things, you can start to relax. And some people actually can't meditate. They find it a physical impossibility to do so. For me, it kickstarted me on my journey and taught me how to link in with information that otherwise I probably wouldn't have got.
Right. Okay. I've just asked because, like, you know, I don't meditate anymore. I go through phases when I have my spiritual moments. I'm going to meditate, I'm going to do this. But when I last went on a couple of shamanic things, I did journey, and I journeyed. Wow, it was amazing. And I found that easier to let go of than, you know, when you're meditating to, like, move away for spirit to move in. But yeah, to follow the drum and stuff and just go with it. I think it, and you know, with the mediumship, it's say what you see, basically, isn't it? And don't even question, just kind of say what you see. That's kind of how I was taught. But with the, and the same goes, the same principle with the shamanic journeying, just go with it. And sometimes, yeah, like you say, you feel like you're making it up, but then I've had some experiences and it's just like, that was just amazing. And I can still remember them now, you know?
Wow.
So you guys, you've got an event. It's, when is it? This
Sunday.
This Sunday in Falmouth. Yes?
Yeah.
The Draca, what's the name of the event? Sorry, I didn't want
to put the poster. Dracaena.
The Dracaena.
Dracaena Community Centre.
Right, the Dracaena Community Centre on Sunday, and that's 7 till 10pm. And Martin and Lawrence are both going to be, well, what are you going to be doing? Because I've never seen a shaman and a medium work together before.
It'll be very interesting for me. Lawrence will be appearing first. We're going to split the evening in two. I will introduce Lawrence, and he'll be off with his side of things. I'll let him explain that to you. I don't want to take his thunder. But Lawrence will have about an hour and a quarter with what he's going to do with the audience. There'll be a short break of 10 minutes, and then I'll have probably an hour and a quarter's mediumship to follow that. So you're getting two different looks at these events, which I'm really looking forward to. We've advertised it extensively, and thank you to you, by the way. Thank you so much for having us both. This is going to really help.
Here.
You sent me a message saying, could I share your poster or mention it? And I thought, no, come on, let's get you guys on. Let's chat, because it's always a fascinating.
That's fantastic.
It's a fascinating discussion. I'm thinking now, what am I doing on Sunday? Dare I venture out?
Yeah, so I'll let Lawrence tell you what he's going to do on Sunday. I'll let him do that first.
Okay. basically, it's the history of shamanism. As far as we know, a little bit of my history, which I touched on earlier, the tools of a shaman, the drum, rattle, crystals, medicine bag, that sort of stuff, and what a shaman does and what they don't do. So hopefully that'll take about 5 minutes. What we're going to do after that, I don't know.
Are you going to do a drum journey or anything?
Yes, I'm hoping or we plan for me to do a short shamanic drumming journey for members of the audience who do want to take part to do it. What I intend to do on that is once they've finished the journey, they... Okay. When they go on the journey, I show them or tell them how to go to the lower world to find something of interest and bring it back. So when they're on this journey, as you've done yourself, you'll find a stone or a twig or a shell or feather or whatever it is. And that means something special to the individual. So if we have 8 people turn up, I can interpret 8 things for them. The secret of doing that, and which I'll explain on Sunday, is don't take a shopping trolley with you, because it just takes up too long to explain this means this, this means that. So that's what we're planning to do on Sunday, a short shamanic journey at the end, towards the end.
Wow. And then, Martin, you're going to endeavour to give messages from our loved ones.
Exactly that. Some mediums that I've seen in the past, I've been doing this 20-plus years now, and I've seen everything from good to bad to indifferent and to the brilliant. And every medium works differently, but the way I work, a lot of mediums like to pick people out from the audience and say, oh, I'd like to talk to you. I don't actually work like that. It frightens them to death sometimes doing that. But basically, I leave it to spirit. Spirit will sometimes queue up. And if the person that I pick up that's in spirit was very, not loud, but very talkative, when they were alive, they're very much the same way when they're in spirit. So you, in general, you get the ones that are very, very keen to link with you that come first. And the ones that are very shy, they sort of stand towards the back. But I leave it in the spirit totally. I will decide when I've got them. They will tell me where I'm going to go, who I'm going to link with. They'll give me, as I say, hopefully if it's working correctly, that they'll give me a lot of information about themselves, where they come from, what I will see them with their clothing. I will know what sort of people they are. So I'm talking clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. And if they're so seeing, hearing, sensing, I know you know all this, Shelley, but
No.
So when that's all working together at the same time, you usually get quite a composite account of who you've got. And somebody will shout out, or sometimes more than one person will say, I know exactly who you've got there. And I'll say, well, why is that? Because what I need to know is that you do get some people coming to these events that are desperate to link in with people and will accept whatever you're saying, no matter what. So I want to make sure when I'm giving that link that I've got the right person and for the right reason. So I will always double check with somebody that I'm linking with who I have from spirit to make sure that it's the right person. I sometimes get 3 or 4 people all trying to claim Uncle Joe.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's that's better brilliant. Than no one. conversely, I get people coming up to me afterwards saying, I didn't like to say anything because I was a bit shy, but that was for me. And have you still got him? Is he still there? And I say, well, no, he's not. I can't now bring him forward for you. So I try and say to people before I start working, look, guys, don't be shy. We're all friends here. I'm not going to embarrass anybody. There are no secrets that I'm going to give out in front of anybody in the public. If you recognize what I'm saying, you need to speak to me, because once I get the right link, then I get more. The way it works is it's like I always say to people, it's like ringing a telephone. If nobody picks it up the other end, then eventually the phone will stop ringing. So that's the analogy I use. And I try and convince them to, if they recognize what I'm saying, even if, as you say, it's 3 or 4 people, that's brilliant, because I'll work out who it's for rather than nobody speaking, or if I'm talking to someone else and I'm not quite happy about it, someone sitting at the back thinking, oh, I wish I'd said something, you know.
Yeah, it is amazing. And when it works and you give those messages, I once went to a weekend with Ali about 5 or 6 years ago. with Stephen O'Brien.
Do you know Stephen O'Brien? Him.
Yeah, well, he was our teacher. Anyway, so it was right. like a real blessing to go up to Swansea and do a weekend workshop with him. And I got a message, and my father-in-law had passed away about 3 months before. And he said, he was just like, came in, he said, right, I've got a man here, Malcolm, I'm hearing. Red roof and something to do with an ice cream. He was called Malcolm. He was from Redruth, and he was eating an ice cream just before he died. And I was amazing. Mm. And when you get that evidence, you're like, this is what it's all about, isn't it? You know, yeah, you can give people. Exactly. Yeah. But
I had a lady once. I was working in Red Hill in a theatre, and I had a child. And as I saw this child, they were in a hospital bed with scaffolding around their head, like, so they were obviously had serious surgery on their head, and there was a lot of other evidence that went with it. And this lady burst into tears, and I had to walk up and say to her, are you happy with me to continue with this? And she said, absolutely, please don't stop, and I'll tell you later. I gave the rest of the message, and it was her son who had been hit by a car, and sadly he went to spirit. And the evidence that I gave regarding the surgery on the head, she said, you absolutely nailed that. You don't know what you've done for me today. I've had closure, and I now know that my boy is still around. And it was I had buzzing up and down my back. And when you have that sort of feedback from people, you know why you're doing it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I know it must be so much harder when you get messages from children. You know, I mean, we accept elderly people die and stuff like that, but a child, it's just something else, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But and I think lots of people, if they do lose anybody, they go on that path, don't they? Because they hope, they pray they've gone somewhere else, and if they can get a message that's going to uplift them and give them evidence, well, it's a life changer, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. And it's a tree, you know. It's like if you throw a few acorns into the ground, you don't know what's going to come of that. This is all about empathy, and it sounds a little trite for me to say this, but if you care for others, you know, people say, well, how do you get to do this work? And I say, well, if you care about other people and you want to help people, in no matter in what way that might be, and there are millions of us that like to help people in different ways, thankfully, on this earth, apart from the others that we don't talk about. But if you have an empathy with people and you want to help, that's all the only qualifications you need to be able to do this work. And it's a privilege to be, for me and for Lawrence, I'm sure, with what he does, to be called and have the ability to do it. Because as I say, if one person that you're working with has their socks blown off by what you're saying, who are they going to speak to, and who are they and so on and so on and so on, and this just spreads. It's a wonderful way of people realizing that there's actually more to life than you realize.
Yeah, a much bigger picture. And what about you, Lawrence? Can you give us like one of your experiences, like one of your journeys that's just been like mind blowing?
One of the first journeys I undertook on my own was in a woodland. And our teacher, Kenneth Meadows, told us to walk into the woodlands and find a place that you feel happy with. You feel safe there, which is called a power spot. And the first thing you do is rattle with your rattle. You rattle around it to calm nature's energy. Not that nature needs calming, but just to let nature know that it's going to be spoken to in a way it may not have been done before. I found this spot, and I was leaning or sitting with my back against a tree, and as clear as hopefully people can hear my voice now, I heard a voice say, lay down. And I thought, no, this was right at the start of my adventure with shamanism. And it sounded so much like one of the other guys that was on the call that I got up and looked around. I thought, he's hiding in a bush. He's winding me up. Looked all around, nobody there. Laid down, again, lay down. So I laid on my back and I'm looking up at the canopy of this huge oak tree. And again, the second time it happened, I can't say that I heard it, but up here, and I'm sure through these, I heard the voice say, look to your left. And when I did, it's about 3 or 4 feet from the trunk of this huge oak tree, there was a little tiny sapling. And I thought, wow, that's what I am. I'm this little sapling that's growing up into this tree with different levels. Do you remember I said earlier there's three levels, lower, middle and upper world? Well, there's thousands more. With that, I close my eyes and I can clearly see me laying inside the trunk of this big oak tree. And when I looked up, and I hadn't been smoking anything or shaking anything or anything like that, there was none of that, the inside of the tree was hollow. Disclaimer. And you could see up through the branches, out through the different limbs and twigs. And the end of each twig was a different realm that's possible for the shaman to visit.
Ooh,
so in several lifetimes, tingling. You could never do, I mean, just when it's daylight, go and have a look at a tree and how many twig ends are on that tree.
Yeah.
If you imagine that as each one a different realm, you know, it really did blow my mind.
Wow, I have to say, like, about one, I've only done probably about three or four journeys, but I really resonate with you on that one, because when I did a journey, I was in the underworld and we were told to come up into a woodland. And I came up into a woodland that's like my local woods. And I sat in the hollow of a tree and I just listened. And a herd of deer came into the woods and up close. And all of a sudden they were on high alert and ready to run. And they started running. The next thing, I know this all sounds mental, but the next thing, I was kind of on the back of one of these deers, okay, and I could feel the heart beating. I could feel the fear of that deer. And it went on for a few minutes. And then we were, I think, in the upper world and she was showing me her babies. Anyway, then it was over. But the point of it was, at the time, I was suffering with really bad panic attacks to the point that I used to think I might die of a heart attack because my heart is beating so much. But for the first time ever, I resonated with what a deer feels like, having, you know, a panic attack. And they always say it's flight or what do they call it? Fear or fight?
Flight or fight. Yeah,
flight or fight. But she was explaining to me how her heart felt and the same that mine was, and it was coming from nothing. It sounds a bit surreal, but it's something I'll never forget. It was just an amazing experience.
The other thing about the deer is it's telling you then, because we've moved on, the wheel of life, and we've all moved on, to patience. Don't move until you're ready. If you think of what a deer does, if you're lucky enough to see them in the wild, you can get quite close before they're up and away.
Yeah.
But so it's telling you to move at the right time. It's also telling you to dance, because if you look at the size of a deer, their feet are tiny compared with the rest of the body. So it's very lightly moving about, you know, and their hearing is phenomenal. So, yes, that's telling you all that about the deer.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. It makes me forget about that side that once, not just the shaman side, the spiritual side, the senses and everything, how amazing, it all is, and fascinating. And, you know, heads up to you guys still going strong. It is obviously your calling. It wasn't my calling. I think I had to explore all of these avenues to be the person I am now. But it's never called passionately to me enough like other people, you know. But
Shelley, you're a linker of people, aren't you? You actually introduce people together, and that's an amazingly important task in itself.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm in a really good place at the moment. You know, when the ego goes, and I mean, even doing this show, I used to get so terribly nervous and think, what are people thinking about me? Who the hell does she think she's? Blah, blah. I don't care anymore. I've just got this newfound confidence. This is what I do. This is what I do for a hobby.
And, fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really good place to be. And, yeah, I'm very content in life. And like you say, the whole, I also did a shamanic day thing with Maureen Mernon, I think she was called. You might have heard, I think she's more a medium, but we did a shamanic day and we had to do one of those dream catchers, okay? And yeah, it was a really valuable lesson, actually, because we'd done an animal as well, and I got mouse, all right, in this meditation. And then everybody's there taking their time, weaving their little things. And after 5 minutes, I just throw it because I'm so frustrated. but the lesson was, and I realise this now every day, it's about now, I was always waiting to get to the end result, not the process. And even now when I've been decorating my house, rather than rushing everything to try and get that, be now, be present. And I think it's one of the most valuable things I've ever learned, really.
That's a big Buddhist thing, isn't it? Be in the now, be in the present, enjoy the journey and not the final result.
Yeah, and it's like even when you have days like you've got to go to work and think, I really don't want to go to work, can't wait till 3 o'clock and I finish work. And I've learned now to be like, even if you're feeling like it, get there, enjoy it. If you enjoy it and make the most of it, time will go. And, you know, what's the point of wishing your days away? It's exactly.
That also, Shelley, comes back to the deer, telling you to be patient. Don't try and push or pull the grass to make it grow. It's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm in a good place. Thank you. But we've got 10 minutes left, guys. It's gone quick. So, yeah, you're on Sunday at the Dracena. Have I said that right? Dracona?
Dracena. Dracena.
Dracena.
That's it.
Community Centre in Falmouth on Sunday, 7 till 10 o'clock. And, guys, and is it tickets on the door?
No, it's not. We haven't done a ticket thing where it's a first-come, first-served basis. It's payment on the door only. We don't have any facility for cards, sadly. And
no,
we are limited.
Cash. Yeah.
It's cash. It's just cash, yeah. It's £10 per person. We have availability for 60 people. I've got a feeling, if we're lucky, we might have a few more than that, having been on your show, Shelley.
Because I'm so massive.
But we've got contingencies for that, because if we get too many for the room, we've got a room next door, which we can tell everybody, right, pick your chairs up, we're going next door, which is a gym. So we can move everybody next door if we get too many people. But that's a problem we'd like to have. So,
gone through every avenue. Yeah, I hope it will be a huge success. I should imagine it would. It sounds fascinating.
This is the first time Lawrence and I have worked together.
How did you come across each other? Sorry. Yeah. How did you meet? Have you known each other for ages?
We were in a cafe in the village. Martin was one end with his family and I was the other end reading my book. And we were introduced that way.
What book was you reading? Can you remember? I only ask because you see people sat down sometimes and you see them reading like really interesting books. You think, I need to talk to that person. That's the sort of book I would read.
It was called Don't Point That Thing at Me. You asked, don't blame me, you asked.
Okay.
By a guy called Cyril Figlioni.
Okay.
It's about a guy called Mordecai. Johnny Depp played him in the film Mordecai. It's one of the few books that made me laugh out loud.
Oh, I do like a laugh out loud book. Yeah. So what? You just started chatting and it's like, oh, I'm a shaman. Oh, I'm a medium.
No, at the time, the lady who owned the cafe knew that I did Shaman, and she knew that Martin did the medium bit, and she said, you two need to talk.
Yeah, so that was that. He can't get rid of me now, so...
I was going to say that. He can't get rid of me either.
But we're very pleased to be doing this on Sunday because, as you probably know, I'm going to be moving away from Cornwall. A very happy event, but it's also a sad event. I'm going to leave behind people like Lawrence, other people that I know. But we'll be away by the 15th of April. So this will be the last one that I do. And I've served a lot of churches in Cornwall in the last 20 years since we've been down. So it's quite a big chunk that I'm leaving behind, but I'm hopefully going to set up where we're going. And if this is a good success or great success on Sunday, I'm sure Lawrence will come up and work with me in the north, hopefully.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, are you taking it further, Lawrence, as in are you teaching shamanism? Do you hold circles or anything?
I do tend to run courses, but I don't advertise. If you knew four or five people and you wanted a day or a couple of hours, or you wanted to do a course, I'll quite gladly come to you and give the talk, and you know, and you can pursue it that way. But no, I don't advertise because I'm old and I really don't know how to do it. I'm an old person.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I do.
Okay.
I'm 73.
Wow, good on you.
Doesn't look it, does he?
He doesn't. No, Martin, how old are you again?
66.
Right. Oh, God, bad number. And I also remember the first time I met you, Martin, because we was chairing at Pengegan Church when we used to run it monthly, me and Ali. And in comes this man who he's told was an ex-policeman, and with his shirt. And his jacket looked very handsome, he did. I always said, you never wear your suit this time. I thought you might have worn it tonight. Suit on Sunday?
I'll be making an effort on Sunday, and so will Lawrence.
Wow. I'm going to add the stream back in. Because we're going to finish in a minute.
No, it's not worth seeing that.
Oh, bless you. Well, I hope it goes really well. It sounds like it's going to be an amazing evening.
We're really looking forward to it. And I can't thank you enough, Shelley, for having us on your show. It's been great.
No, you're welcome.
We didn't think that we'd be able to talk for this long. I said to Lawrence before we started, how are we going to talk for an hour?
Everybody says that, and they say, where does that hour go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
And even I worry about that, though, sometimes. And I think I've got a couple of songs there. And if it's getting a bit edgy, I can, like, put a song in and, like, we can regroup, you know. But touch words, you know, most of the time it works, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
no, it's been great.
Yeah, okay, right. Well,
Shelley, thank you very much for this opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome. You don't need to keep thanking me. No, thank you. Thank you for being guests, because I need guests every week. You know, anybody out there listening that's got a good conversation to start and they want to have a chat about something, do get in touch, because it used to be quite frustrating trying to get people, and you want real, authentic people just to chat to. You don't have to be anybody famous or anything. It's like anybody that's got a story. And, you know, coincidentally, oh, I don't like saying it because I don't know your views on certain things, but I've got a man on next week from Campbell, and actually not far from me, who is part of a big group to do with the whole COVID vaccine damage. His son was 30, I believe, had the jab, and a couple of days later died. Call it coincidence, call it what, but it's a big thing going on out there. And, you know, he's got a massive story to tell. And you got lots of interesting people to talk to. So
I think the most interesting people, as you've just said, are not the famous and the rich and famous. It's the down to earth, grounded people that got the best stories to tell, I've always found.
Yeah, anybody. I had a guy come yesterday to price up some removals outside, and he was a farmer. Of course, we got talking about the farmer subject stuff, and he was proper Cornish, but We was out there for half an hour gabbing away, and it's lovely. I just like talking to people. Just as well.
You've really, done a good job. You've done a great job.
Oh, bless
you.
You're doing well. Right, well, you take care, guys, and I know it's going to go well on Sunday. So, guys, if you're at Loose End on Sunday, get down there and see these awesome guys. Right,
thank
take
you,
care,
Kelly.
My lovelies. Hope it goes well.
All the best, darling.
See you soon. Bye
now.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, as I say, we will have Tony...